Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, the Chelsea FC podcast from The Athletic, and we've got a bumper show lined up for you today. We're talking Super Cup and Super Kepa. Chelsea's Premier League season gets underway as Patrick's Palace pop in, and we get inside the mind of Romelu Lukaku, sort of. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham, the Kepa Redemption Special. Here we go then, gang. Twice weekly SOC is a real thing, and we'll be mixing up the lineup as we go to two times a week. Sorry to report that I, Matt Davis-Adams, will be the one member of the cast who won't be rotated. Think of me as a pre-2019 Cesar Azpilicueta. With me today, the perfect person to pitch Palace's positives and pinch points, it's Dominic Fifield.
Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Also, an SOC debut for our newest teammate. He's a striker-turned-pundit. Hello, Sam Parkin.
Good morning, Matt.
Sam, for anybody who doesn't know, tell us your connection to Chelsea, please.
Well, I joined the club at about 13 years of age, if memory serves me right, full-time in about 1998, part of the youth team with John Terry. We know a bit about him, John Harley as well, who went on and had a good Football League career. Professional for 4 years, retired in at Chelsea, that was, went on and played in the Football League in England and Scotland. And after retiring 2014, I've been back at the club, really, part of Chelsea TV, covering the club at all levels, really, from the under-18s, 23s, the women, and obviously the men's first team. So, across the board, really, but I would probably say specialist subject would probably be the under-23s, the players out playing in the Football League on loan. I'm across that, so hopefully I'll be able to keep the listeners up to speed on the developments of a lot of the young players.
Yeah, you'll always have plenty of work in that category. Sam's going to give us those players' insights that Dom and I, not to mention Liam and Simon, could only dream of. Speaking of players, a whole bunch of them had a kick about in Belfast on Wednesday night. We'll look back on the Super Cup next.
Kepa with the save! Kepa the Chelsea hero! Albiol can't get the penalty in! And Chelsea win the Super Cup! Thomas Tuchel got it right, made the goalkeeping change, and the hero for Chelsea is Kepa Arrizabalaga.
Always a temptation to call it the Super Cup final, I think, but we seem to have lost that this year. Inaccurate, I guess, seeing as there's no semi-final. Anyway, the 2021 Super Cup took place at Windsor Park between Chelsea and Villarreal. We'll hear what the chaps made of it soon enough, but our own Simon Johnson was on hand to witness it live. He sent us this message not long after full-time.
Well, Chelsea have done it again. Here we are at Windsor Park. Kepa has just produced his heroics and the Chelsea fans are in celebratory mood. The players are celebrating in front of me. It was an extraordinary end to what had actually been a pretty average game. Certainly from Chelsea's point of view, it started so well in the first half with Ziyech, but his injury seemed to affect Chelsea more than anybody. But my word, Thomas Tuchel seems to have the Midas touch. 2 years on from the League Cup final at Wembley. Remember Kepa refusing to come off ahead of a penalty shootout in the League Cup final. He was the villain that day. But he's the hero tonight. Tuchel bringing him on for the penalty shootout and he produces two fine saves. And now it's party time in Belfast. Chelsea have started the new season the way they finished the last. They're going to be lifting the trophy, the Super Cup trophy, having won the Champions League in May. It wasn't a pretty performance, but the way they're celebrating right now, they don't care. And to be honest, What a perfect way to start the season, to not play well. Crystal Palace may have looked at the fact that Chelsea have played 120 minutes and look forward to Saturday. But Romelu Lukaku, he'll be in the team by then. I think it's going to be a lively night in Belfast. But for the second time in their history, Chelsea won the Super Cup and Kepa is the hero.
Well, Dom, Simon's hit a lot of the key points there, but I think we've got to start at the finish, haven't we, with Kepa, because my goodness me, that was ballsy from Thomas Tuchel and from Kepa, I guess, and it worked.
Yeah, it did. And I found it fascinating that this was a plan that was actually hatched ahead of the FA Cup tie with Barnsley last season and born entirely on data and what they witnessed in terms of presumably the penalties that Kepa and Mendy had faced in training at Chelsea. So it made perfect sense. And if you are going to consider doing this in a significant match at some point in the future, then actually this was a decent occasion to give it a run out as an experiment. And it did work. It did work. Do you think that Kepa had muscled up a bit and bulked up a bit? He looked, maybe it was just a shirt that he was wearing, but he looked a bit more imposing than he had done in previous years at Chelsea. And the way that he psychologically tried to unsettle the Villarreal players in that shootout, okay, it cost him a booking, but I quite like that. I thought that was quite ballsy in itself. And yeah, it was probably the first time in a long time that we've seen the best of Kepa, you know, in terms of his mentality as well as his performances, and two good saves. And it was nice that he and Mendy were able to share that triumph together.
Sam, when Louis van Gaal did this in the 2014 World Cup and brought Tim Krul on, you thought, oh, Louis van Gaal, he's such a maverick, isn't he? But with Thomas Tuchel, you kind of knew that this was going to be something that was highly calculated and thought through, because that's just the way that he works.
Yeah, it feels more measured. And the other elements to it are you need a coach who is managing the dressing room in a manner where everyone is on board, and you need your number one to have an open mind to what the modern game is. And it's a squad game, and it would be easy for Mendy to feel that he's not been back there and the manager hasn't got the confidence in him. But it, from his demeanour and from the way he ran off and how he spoke post-match, it just feels and seems that everyone's on the same page. And that has got to be pretty unique in that crazy goalkeeping world, because it's a very individual position. It takes a certain character to put themselves in the goal. And to remain, I suppose, thinking about the team in that moment says a lot about Mendy's character as well as Kepa's.
Yeah, and on Kepa, Simon's written a fair bit about him in his post-match piece, which you can read on The Athletic now. I'd just add that last season, going to empty stadiums, Kepa was always the loudest cheerleader for the Chelsea team, and whether that meant encouraging his teammates or having a go at the referee or the opposition, but he was really into it, and you could tell that he's bothered about what happens at Chelsea in his Chelsea career. So it was great for him to get that little bit of redemption. Not so good for Hakim Ziyech though, Dom. Scored the goal and then he goes off injured with what looked like a fairly serious shoulder problem. At least that's what Thomas Tuchel called it. Just like last season, really, for him. He got injured in pre-season against Brighton. Then he was always playing catch-up. He looked really good against Spurs last week. He had a good game against Arsenal as well. And you thought with all these latecomers back from the Euros, he was almost nailed on to start against Palace, certainly, on Saturday.
Absolutely. I mean, look, he's been in fine goal-scoring form through pre-season. Okay, only pre-season, but six, that was his sixth goal of pre-season in Belfast. And he just looked the part. He looked as if he was sharp. He was trying to think. There was that glorious, I made a note of it, the 24th minute, the diagonal pass that he pinged from the left over all the sort of clutter in the 6-yard box to Chaloba beyond the far post. It was an absolute thing of beauty. 3 minutes later, he's put Chelsea ahead, and he was the main man. You just looked at him and thought, well, if you're Patrick Vieira preparing for Saturday, then you've got to think about putting somebody on him to stop him from playing here. He's being a nightmare. And then true to form, as you say, for the second year running, he picked up what looked like a really innocuous injury just jumping at a corner, I think it was, and obviously I think he's pinged his shoulders, dislocated his right shoulder, which makes you wonder whether there's some kind of underlying weakness there. I don't know, Sam may have had experience of this in his playing days, but it didn't look as if there was enough contact really to pull it out of the socket. But maybe it was just the way that he was jumping with his arms up and just the awkward nature of that contact. But I mean, that's a lengthy injury to recover from, and it's also an injury that you can be susceptible to relapses in the future. So dreadful, dreadful timing, unless you're a Crystal Palace supporter, in which case you're really, really celebrating.
It's the worst time, Sam, isn't it, to get injured for a footballer, the game before the season officially kicks off. It's going to be a tough challenge for him mentally, I guess, to come through this and get back to where he was.
Yeah, in terms of attacking players, he's right at the top of the list in terms of players that have got ticks against their names during this pre-season. You can point at, I think Hudson-Odoi has had a good pre-season. Obviously, everyone's seen what Chaloba can bring to the party last night. But yeah, I think Ziyech, for someone who didn't do it consistently during his first season, has shown real flashes. I thought he was actually quiet until those moments that Dom mentioned there. Two amazing deliveries, the goal, which is, you know, very important to back up what he did in the game against Tottenham, because it's a game of more importance, and I think gives them a nice balance. You know, with Havertz, showed that ability to be able to run in behind for the goal. Ziyech obviously wants things to feet, but it looked like a combination that would work going into the weekend. So really disappointed, because when we saw him at Stamford Bridge for Ajax, that was a night where you couldn't take your eyes off him. He was that good. And that was obviously why Chelsea brought him to the football club. And unfortunately, it's just been curtailed by injury on a couple of occasions so far.
The other player I wanted to talk about from Wednesday night is Trevor Chaloba. Dom, we heard that he was going out on loan and Valencia was the most likely destination. This might have changed Thomas Tuchel's mind, mightn't it?
Well, potentially. I mean, I think Tuchel suggested they would be having a think about it again post match, because he was very impressive. I mean, there were the odd little error in there. I think he dawdled on the ball at one point and had it stolen off him. But generally speaking, he was athletic. He was strong. He looked like a player that wasn't overawed by the occasion. And okay, it's a glamorous pre-season friendly in many ways, but it's for silverware. I mean, it's a reward for winning the Champions League against the team that's won the Europa League. So it is a match of some significance. And he just looked as if he was at ease in those surroundings, like against top quality players as well, incidentally. I mean, that Gerard Moreno looked a real handful all night. So I think he would have done himself a lot of favours with that performance, as he has done throughout pre-season. Given that he's moved on, and we know the situation with those centre halves at the club in terms of their contractual situations, there might be a logic in having a player that can operate at centre half, but also probably in midfield if required, if needed, on the books, so that he is available and could do a job for you at some point in the season. We know that there's going to be a cluttered schedule ahead for Chelsea. And I just wonder whether these performances against, in the last two matches, Spurs and Villarreal, might make them rethink that decision on the loan. Because it did seem nailed on before that they wanted him to get regular game time again. And the only way for him to do that was to go out and get another loan. But he didn't look like a player that had been struggling near the relegation zone in Ligue 1 Lorient last season. He looked top quality.
What would you do if you were him, Sam? He's 22. Don mentions he can play in midfield as well. But if he stays at Chelsea, he's behind Christensen, Rudiger, Thiago Silva, and possibly Kurt Zouma as well, if he stays. So are you thinking, if you're Trevor Chaloba, well, I'll take that. I'll play on match day 6 in the Champions League in the Carabao Cup and show the boss that I can still do it when I'm close at hand. Or I'll go out to, you know, a top-level loan like a Valencia and show them what I can do there.
I think he'd want to have a loan at a club that have got probably aspirations of challenging, possibly, having had a season at Ipswich where they were relegated, a season at Huddersfield where there was three managers, and another relegation scrap in France. I think I'd probably leave it to the last minute. I'm sure that would be dictated by the powers that be, but there's going to be people looking on after last night's performance, which I agree with everything Dom said, but if you take away the occasion and the atmosphere, the opening 45 minutes was probably quite a nice way to bed yourself into a Chelsea career, considering he wasn't pressed at all. Mm-hmm. The second half, I think that was the biggest factor in the change of dynamic in the game, that they were a bit more aggressive and it forced mistakes, a few mistakes from him and quite a few, obviously a costly mistake from Rudiger. But I felt in the first half, it was so nice for Chalobah to be able to just pop the ball into Hudson-Odoi, make another angle, keep it nice and simple. And then he started to take risks when he had that confidence, which was great to see. And his athleticism, it got him out of a couple of positions where I think his starting position was a little bit off. And because of his athleticism and his power, he was able to recover. But I would probably obviously wait and see what happens, but I'm sure there's going to be some high pedigree clubs in for him, and another year wouldn't do him any harm at all, playing at a good level.
Well, he's got himself a winner's medal on his Chelsea debut. That can't be a bad thing. Chelsea winning the Super Cup then for just the second time in their history. It was the fifth time that they've been in the game. And that was Chelsea's final warm-up match before the new Premier League season kicks off. The Blues begin with a derby date against Crystal Palace at Stamford Bridge. We'll look ahead to that after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
What kind of sorcery is this? Chelsea starting the season with a Saturday 3 o'clock game at Stamford Bridge. It's been a while. Now, Dom, yesterday, the first question I wrote here is the team that started this one going to be the same that started Villarreal? But that was before I knew that it was going to last 120 minutes. And surely, you'd think it'd be unlikely that many who started that game and finished or played the majority of it at least would start against Palace. But it's not like that. They can change the entire starting 11, is it? You know, you have Havertz, your Werner, especially if Ziyech and Lukaku's not in at that point. They're going to definitely start, aren't they? So Thomas Tuchel would have been pretty annoyed that it went 120 minutes plus on Wednesday.
Yeah, he spoke a bit about that post-match. And psychologically, it was important for them to win the game. And that will have helped in some ways in terms of preparation. And I think his quote was, physically, it's the worst thing that could have happened, but victory and a trophy helped to regenerate, which is quite a nice way of putting it. He's psychologically, they will carry a medal in going into the Premier League season, and maybe that will help ease some of the pain in the legs. But I was looking at their options. I mean, obviously, I've got a slightly vested interest in this one, but I don't know whether he would look at like a Mason Mount or Reece James or Ben Chilwell and think that they're ready to come into a Premier League game from the start. I mean, Mount, I think that was Mount's first appearance, wasn't it, in a pre-season fixture. James didn't get off the bench, Chilwell likewise. I mean, I think it would be a risk, and you have to play a sort of longer game in terms of players' preparations. All these sports science departments have their set minutes that they want to give each player going into their first competitive start of a season. And these guys haven't had any. They literally haven't had any. I don't know what situation Thiago Silva's in, whether he'd be ready to step into a Premier League match. You know, in looking at further up the field, I mean, Tammy Abraham might not even be at the club on Saturday. So, I mean, I don't know whether they could even think about preparing with him in mind. It is disruptive, and it goes back to what we were saying off air beforehand. It is crazy that the Super Cup can go to extra time. It's absolutely ludicrous. I mean, just go to penalties at the end of 90 minutes. It's not as if extra time really threw up any particular good storylines other than Kepa coming on for Mendy in the 119th minute. I mean, it just seems ludicrous on UEFA's behalf, and I think Chelsea's players will be suffering for it, to be honest. I don't think many sports sciences departments will have 120 minutes of semi-competitive action 3 days before the start of the Premier League in mind when they start drawing up their preparations.
Yeah, and it kind of brought into focus that Chelsea maybe weren't done any favours by the Premier League. When you see that Villarreal's game against Granada was taking place on Monday night rather than on Saturday, I'm sure Thomas Tuchel would have appreciated that too. Sam, I always used to think that it was really overblown how much footballers need to play football in pre-season to get back into playing football again when it's their job. But then I saw Mason Mount come on last night, and for the first 10 minutes, it was like his boots were shaped like 50 p's. He just couldn't control or pass at all. If you get 6 weeks off, how long do you need to get back up to speed again?
Probably just a couple of weeks on the training ground in terms of your touch and your awareness and such like. But fitness levels, that could take into the season, I would say, to feel that you're fully ready to give everything from the off for 90 minutes can take 5 or 6 games into the season. And I think when you factor in that pre-season is normally 5 or 6 weeks, give or take, the players that Dom's just mentioned are probably still 2 weeks or so, 3 weeks away from being at that level, ready probably to start playing competitive minutes. So I think it's the least amount of risk, isn't it, going into this game at the weekend, if that makes sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if one of those aforementioned names, Mount, Chilwell, gets a run out, but it'll only be on the terms of the people behind the scenes that are working. Whether they factor in that Ben Chilwell didn't play the Euros, that could be something to look at. But I just think, as you touched on in the question, Matt, when your body shuts down and you're not training in a competitive environment and you're on the beach and you're having an opportunity to put your legs up, that's where you lose your sharpness. So Ben Chilwell is in the same boat, really, with the other chaps in that regard, and will probably need a little bit more time to get up to speed on the training ground.
Tell us a bit about Palace then, Dom. I'm sure other than in the Arrizabalaga household, the Vieira household was a scene of celebration on Wednesday night as the game went long. But it looks like Palace have done some pretty decent business. But I guess the new manager is the big X factor.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And they brought in 5 players, but you have to bear in mind that 11 were out of contract, of whom 9 left at the end of last season. So I look at Palace's squad now and it's still in transition. It still needs further additions. It's not as strong as it's going to be, fingers crossed, in September. The other thing to bear in mind with that is that a lot of these guys are actually injured already. Michael Olise, an ex-Chelsea youth team player, who will be an excellent signing, I'm no doubt, at Palace, but he arrived with a back problem that's going to take him out into the autumn. Joachim Andersen, the centre-half that was on loan at Fulham last season, who will be a mainstay of this team, has currently got a calf problem. He's out. There are issues across midfield as well. Obviously, Eberechi Eze and Nathan Ferguson are long-term Achilles injury issues as well. So although I'm saying that it's not a bad time to be playing Chelsea, it's not a bad time to be playing Palace either, to be fair. And the unknown is Vieira. Yeah, no one knows what he will... how he will do in the Premier League. I think he's made all the right noises so far. He's made a good impression, a favourable impression on the training pitch. His coaching staff seem to be progressive. And it's given that they just had... this is no criticism of Roy Hodgson, who did a wonderful, wonderful job at Crystal Palace and will go down as probably the greatest manager in their history, bar possibly Steve Coppell. When you've had 4.5 years with one management team, just a change of any kind is refreshing to the whole thing, revitalising to the whole setup. And I think everybody around the club at Beckenham has experienced that and has bought into what Vieira's been trying to do. I think we'll see a more energetic Crystal Palace team. I think they'll be more proactive. I think they'll be pressing further up the pitch eventually. I'm not saying they'll definitely do that on the first afternoon of the season against the European champions, but there will be more energy about this Crystal Palace team, and I think they will surprise people over the course of the season. But it's going to take him time to implement those ideas and to get those philosophies, you know, ingrained in his team, and a team and a squad that is still evolving and will still evolve for another month yet.
Yeah, going to be interesting to see Mark Gerhey back at the bridge. Yeah. Somebody else who Chelsea supporters might not want to be seeing in an opposition shirt, Sam, Christian Benteke. If you're him, are you going up to Patrick Vieira, your new boss, this week and saying, by the way, I've got 7-12 against Chelsea, boss. I've scored at Stamford Bridge for Villa, for Liverpool and for Palace. Please start me. He's definitely aware that he's got a good record against Chelsea, right?
Yeah, he would be. But there's players on the... I would say there's players on the Chelsea team that have got a good recent history against Palace, but because of the things that Dom said, I think that goes out of the window to a degree this season, because we're talking about a new entity in Crystal Palace, different players, different ideas. If you were coming up against the Roy Hodgson team with the same personnel, if you're Christian Pulisic, who did well in that game at Selhurst last season, you may be rubbing your hands together. I think players look at it more like that. You know, it's more personnel. If you're playing up against the centre-half or you've had success against in the past, yeah, you fancy your chances. I think it's different if the club's maybe changed and evolved since that last fixture. So I think this is a difficult game for Chelsea to prepare for, maybe, considering Palace are, you know, on the face of it, probably one of the most exciting outfits in the Premier League, because we just don't know what they're going to serve up. So it was probably quite a nice dress rehearsal for Thomas Tuchel in that Villarreal. We were probably a bit of an unknown quantity last night. So we'll see. But I think with Benteke, he's got to use anything, hasn't he, really, as fuel and as motivation to get him in that side, because it's still not really happened for him, although there are obvious flashes from time to time.
I think Benteke he ended the season very well last year and was the first of the out-of-contract players to commit to a new deal. I think they realised the value in retaining him. And he scored in the last two friendly games. He played against Brentford B in the week, just trying to get in some fitness, because he inevitably came back with a calf complaint from the Euros. But yeah, so I think he'll play. I mean, he'll play because the alternative is Jean-Philippe Mateta. And quite frankly... Yeah, well, anyway, he'll play. in terms of the new team, I should stress, actually, weirdly, this weekend, I imagine that it would be Mark Gerhey will be the only one of the new players that features. The others will be absent, injured, or in Colin Gallagher's case, obviously ineligible against his parent club. So there is an irony that the one player that will be debuting for Crystal Palace is a player that Chelsea should know very, very well from the academy days, and that is a player that I'm really excited to see playing regularly in the Premier League. I mean, I'm still slightly baffled by Chelsea's policy on centre halves, if I'm honest. If he genuinely is a player that they rated, as we're led to believe, in the same way that Fikayo Tomori was a player that they rated for a while, why are these guys now playing elsewhere when everybody else on Chelsea's books at centre half is out of contract next summer, pretty much. I'm intrigued to see how he does when he's up against whoever plays up top, Havertz, Werner, whoever. I mean, it won't be an easy start for him, but I think he's going to be a real asset in that Palace team.
Does that show, Sam, maybe a shift in the mentality, or maybe a shift in the power base from academy players from your time to now, whereas, you know, you were probably told by Chelsea what was going to happen to you, whereas people like Gerhey, and maybe to a lesser extent Tomori, have said, this is my future, this is how it's going to go. You know, Tarik Lamptey would be another example of that, of these lads taking their career into their own hand rather than being in awe of the big club that they're contracted to.
Yeah, quite possibly. And it's refreshing to a degree, but that's not to say it doesn't hurt an element of the Chelsea support when this happens. And it's a difficult one to get your head around, just because of, I think, the opportunity for him to play on the left-hand side of that back three. And I look at the options that Chelsea have got, and obviously Rudiger has made that position his own to a certain extent, but I don't see loads of players that can play in that position. And I think that was such a plus point of his successful loan at Swansea. He's supposed to be a brilliant lad as well. He's obviously very focused on what he wants from his career. I remember when he first went to Swansea and he couldn't get in the side initially. I think it was a 4-4 where he was maybe at fault for two or three of the goals. And I remember speaking to John Harley about it. He was very down on himself. And he, rather than saying, I want to go back to Chelsea, which is probably the equivalent of Do You Know Who I Am or whatever in the 90s outside a West End nightclub. He he asked for clips from John, and he spoke to him about the three central defenders that he admired in world football, and John broke down some clips for him, and he got himself back in the Swansea fold, and he's not looked back. So I just felt that was a great indication of a young player with his feet firmly on the ground. So I am disappointed for him, but the other side of the coin is the potential to come back when he's a more mature player. And Chelsea, I'm sure, have got that in the deal, or the opportunity to make further funds on the 18 million that they've recouped already. So it's a bit of a win-win, but of course I'm biased. I would have liked to have seen him given an opportunity in the side.
Sam, this may be a completely daft question, so apologies if it is, but you talk there about a bond between John Harley and Gay, and that's obviously whilst Gay is still contracted actually to Chelsea. But if you're developing talents at the Chelsea Academy, as they have done over the years, there must be a bond that is retained even when these guys leave the club to go and, you know, forge their careers somewhere else. Do you think there's any likelihood that in some point in the future, Gay would come back to John and sort of say, look, things aren't going brilliantly at Palace, whatever. Can you offer me any advice? Do you think coaches retain that relationship with players even when they leave a club?
I would say definitely, yeah. I would say definitely. I think, you know, it's something that's been obviously widely reported about Chelsea's willingness to offer up roles to past players. Mm-hmm. In terms of bringing them into the academy to work as coaches, etc. And I think that funnels all the way up to the first team. I'm talking about obviously Neil Barth's relationship with former players up and down the country who have gone on and had careers, or maybe had their careers curtailed. And I think that would extend to the likes of John Harley and Joe Edwards. Obviously, Jody Morris will surely have a relationship, whatever becomes of Tammy Abraham and Mason Mount and the plethora of amazing guys who won a multitude of honours under his stewardship. So, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure I'd be very surprised if Mason Mount isn't receiving the odd text from these guys even now, even though there's a new management team at the helm.
Just for anybody who doesn't know, John Harley is Sam's BFF, but he's also the assistant to Andy Myers for the Chelsea under-23 team. There will be lots of Cobham kids on show on Saturday. I'm sure whoever they're playing for, we'll look back on Chelsea versus Crystal Palace on Monday's pod. Next today, we eke out even more Lukaku-related content.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Romelu Lukaku then, he either has or is about to start his second spell as a Chelsea player by the time you hear this, listener. Given we've got our own big man up front, we thought it'd be interesting to try and get into the mind of Lukaku as he prepares for his return. I guess the key thing, Sam, is that it's not like any other position, is it? He knows that he is going to be judged solely on his goals output. And if he needs any reminder of that, I guess he only needs to look to Timo Werner from last season or Fernando Torres from the past or any other number of Chelsea strikers that you want to name. He doesn't seem short of confidence, though. You feel like he's going to come into this prepared, knowing what's happening and confident that he'll be able to do it.
He will do, and I think that's built on obviously what he's gone and achieved since he left Chelsea, especially in the last two seasons. So he's coming back as a 28-year-old into a really, yes, cosmopolitan dressing room, but a dressing room that's got a good core of young players as well, which I think is a big difference to when he was at Chelsea 10 years ago, when you had the untouchables, rightly so, because they were bloody brilliant, JT and Lampard and Drogba and Ashley Cole. But when you're a young player, stop me if I'm incorrect here, but there wasn't many young players making that transition at that time. Now, because of the situation that the club found itself in a couple of years ago, there's players that have played loads of games. So it's a different balance to that squad. And he's coming back as a 28-year-old who's got all that experience and goals under his belt where he will feel like the top man. And I think they have to make him feel like that. Whether that means giving him the penalties off Jorginho as well would probably be a good start, considering he's, what, 16 out of 16, I think it was. I read in Liam's piece the other day since he's been in Italy. So, yeah, he's coming back a different player now. And I'm sure, you know, if he gets the balance right in that front three, he can do real damage. I look at, obviously, what Diego Costa had in that he had that facet to his game where he could make something happen out of nothing. You know, he could chase a ball down the channel and out-muscle someone that's in the net. Drogba had the ability to pin centre-halves and score spectacular goals. I think you need that bit extra to be a top striker. And I think Lukaku's ability in one-on-one situation, 40 yards, 30 yards from goal, to shift it away from a defender and finish is his little difference. So he's coming back with that. And he's a goal scorer, but I think that's that little bit extra that he's got, you know, the facet to his game that Drogba had and Diego Costa had in a different way.
Dom, on Monday we spoke about the positives of him returning to a club that he already knows, the area, the club, Cobham, Stamford Bridge, etc. and so on. Worth remembering, he never actually scored for Chelsea in his first spell. If he goes six games without scoring now, that's going to come back into focus, isn't it? So there is some pressure maybe left over residually from his first spell, or is that just not a factor because it was 10 years ago?
I don't think that pressure is born of the first spell. I think that would be born of the, you know, the sheer size of the transfer fee this time around if he did go five, six games without a goal. And yeah, he, as you said, he will be, that'll be how he is measured in terms of the success of this move. I don't think his first spell at the club was so disjointed. It was anticlimactic. Don't get me wrong. I remember the first press conference when he sat there and he talked about his love of Chelsea and, you know, how he'd grown up with pictures of Didier Drogba on his bedroom wall, etc. And he wanted to make a success of it. There's that brilliant video that the club put out of him walking around Stamford Bridge for the first time and thinking this is going to be his stage, this is going to be his theatre, this is where he's going to realise all his dreams. And it didn't work out, but it didn't work out because he was probably a bit raw, and it was also quite a strange time in Chelsea's history, certainly up front. I mean, the biggest irony was that he was sold on or moved off to West Brom on that loan. Or was it Everton? I can't remember. Under Mourinho in 2013, when Mourinho spent the rest of that season whinging about the fact that his striking options were an aging Samuel Eto'o, Fernando Torres, who never really fired as a Chelsea striker, and Demba Ba, who was only ever brought in as a makeshift anyway. I remember he went through that whole season saying, well, next year, that's when I'll have a proper strike force. And sure enough, he went out and got Diego Costa and they won the title the next year. But he just looked at it sometimes and thought, why isn't Romelu Lukaku part of this project? I mean, he had everything. He looked as if he had everything. But maybe, I don't know, mentally, maybe he wasn't quite ready for it yet. Maybe that was the key. And it took him time thriving in slightly less... at clubs that weren't maybe quite in the same limelight, West Bromwich Albion, Everton to a certain extent, before he really truly realised that potential. But I mean, the very fact that Chelsea were so keen to bring him back after that spell at Everton and thought they had him, in fact, that summer, shows that they've been long-standing admirers. They've always liked what they've got there, and they've always thought there's an element of unfinished business there. And I think both club and player share that, and I fully expect him to demonstrate all the potential, realise all the potential that we thought he had back in 2011 during this spell.
Yeah, and just to underline Dom's point there, in that 2012-13 season when he went out to West Brom, he got 17 Premier League goals in 35 games. He's got 20-plus in his last two seasons at Inter in terms of league goals, so I guess he'd be looking to get around about that again. How's Tammy Abraham feeling this morning, Thursday, as we record, Sam? All the signs point to the exit door for him. He might well even be a Roma player as soon as this weekend. Felt a bit sorry for him last night, kind of not really part of the celebrations as he looked on. If you were him, would you say, OK, I'll go and try my luck in Italy for a year and see if I can have success there? Or would you be holding out for Arsenal because you want to stay in London? Or would you be saying, well, I still think I can do a job for you here and trying to force your way into the manager's thinking?
I think as a player, you probably feel that pressure from above. Maybe pressure's not the right word, but I think indirectly or directly, you'll know what the club want the outcome to be. So I think it's difficult sometimes for a player maybe to stay if they want to get some money for you now or want to improve the squad in your absence maybe. I think, yeah, he was on the periphery of the celebrations, but I think, you know, from the outside, his attitude looks to have been exemplary. I think throughout it's never felt like he's angled to get away. Even last season, left out of the FA Cup final, wasn't he? If memory serves me right. Probably times during the last couple of seasons when he wasn't in the side, he probably felt that he should have been playing. I've always felt that because he's grown up at Cobham, essentially, with all these guys, with a number that are flourishing now in the first team. He wants it bad. But I think it just comes to a point now, if Lukaku is going to be the number one, he's got to think about getting regular football. And there's nothing to say that Tammy Abraham at 28 might be the same type of player that Lukaku is now. I think he's got 90 goals at 23, Tammy Abraham. Lukaku's got 100. It's not bad going. You know, when you consider a lot of those goals were in Belgium for Lukaku, yes, in the Championship for Tammy Abraham, but he's a goal scorer. I just think that maybe his all-round game is just not going to be polished enough to be a top Champions League striker right now. That can happen for him. And the other thing is, I was just talking about that little bit extra. What is Tammy's little bit extra? I think he's a brilliant 18-yard box player, but when his hold-up play isn't immaculate, I've already said, I don't know what his USP is, really. When you look at it like that, I think that all those other guys that I've already mentioned have just got that little bit extra. I think Tammy's a goal scorer. And I think he did brilliantly in the circumstances that Chelsea found themselves in. But I just feel like it's his moment, really, to go and build his career and play every week.
Sam, if you're a 23-year-old striker again and you're being not forced out, but you're leaving Chelsea, and Jose Mourinho, as he is now, comes in for you, does he have the same draw that he would have done 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to play for Mourinho?
Right now, I'd have to say no. I think you just look at the... I think, obviously, there was relative success. People would argue it, maybe, at Manchester United. But for a young striker, yeah, I think the landscape's probably changed a little bit in that regard, given... Yeah, how fresh it was when he first came into the Premier League and, you know, how he built such togetherness at Chelsea. I don't know what that boiled down to, but there seems to have been a change. I'd be surprised if Tammy sees that as his right next move. I think there'd be takers in the higher echelons of the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And again, I'd question whether he'd go into a Champions League team and play every week. That's been brutally honest, but I'm hopeful that he can still develop to get to that stage. But I think it may be a case of taking, you know, a step back at the moment to make two steps forward in the future.
It's going to be really interesting to see. I think if those are his two options, do you go for kind of the soft move to Arsenal where you don't have to move house and you got Mikel Arteta putting his arm around you and telling you you're great, or do you go to another country, have to learn another language and get constant aggro and confrontation from your boss. We'll see, I guess. Good luck to Tammy, whatever happens. Right, before we go, I've been thinking about squad numbers. If you listened to the Totally Football Show quiz a couple of years ago, you'll know that I should have thought about it a little harder then. Anyway, we're assuming Romelu Lukaku will take the number 9 shirt off Tammy Abraham's back when he signs. So I'll come up with a little quiz. You're going to love this. Between you chaps, you've got 90 seconds to name as many players to wear number 9 for Chelsea in the Premier League as possible. There are 15 of them. I'm going to start a clock running. So one at a time. Dom, you can go first. The 90 seconds starts now.
Steve Sidwell.
Is correct.
Get in.
Sam?
Premier League era.
Yeah.
Chris Sutton.
Correct. Dom?
Hasselbank.
Correct. Going really well here.
Morata?
Morata is right, yes. Oh,
bloody hell. Torres, did he wear 9? He must have worn 9.
He did, yes.
Oh, Luca?
Correct,
oh,
yes.
God, that's cheating. Think of some crap Chelsea strikers, Dom. Come on. Higuain?
Higuain is correct. That's a great shout, yeah. We're halfway through, Sam, in terms of time.
Tor-Andre Flo?
No. Oh. No, not Flo.
Crespo?
Crespo is right. He's on my list, yeah. There's a couple
Shevchenko?
No, Shevchenko was 7, I'm afraid. 30 seconds to go.
Oh, bloody hell. It's a Premier League era.
Yeah.
He would have been way back in 1992. Cascarino.
Cascarino is correct.
No way. Neil Shipley.
Neil Shipley's wrong. 5 seconds, Dom.
One more guess. No idea. God. There'll be somebody really obscure, like who never played for Chelsea or was this young kid who gave him the... Oh, I don't know. No, I've gone. I've gone blank. Right. I've gone blank.
Time's up. These are the ones that you missed. Tammy Abraham. I mean...
Oh, but you gave him that before. I just presume that was like...
All right, we'll let you off that. Franco Di Santo?
Yeah, as I said, a really young kid. Yeah. Never...
Blimey.
League Cup winner Mattia Kesman?
Who?
Radamel Falcao?
Blimey.
Remember he played for Chelsea for a bit.
Scored against Palace at home once in a 2-1 defeat for Chelsea.
He did, yeah. Very, very sweet smelling Colombian, as I remember. The other two that you didn't get, I'll forgive you for not getting Khalid Boularus.
Oh, blimey.
Seriously, wow.
And the final one was Mark Steen.
Oh, I had Steenie written down.
Well, should have said it. That was funny.
I can't wait for Chelsea number 3s next week. That's going
to
be great.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, we'll be here for a long time. Dom, what have you been writing for Athletic subscribers to enjoy, please?
We've got a piece on Lukaku coming out that Sai has taken the lead on. That will go out there when the transfer is confirmed. I've done an interview with the chief executive of the Canadian Premier League, who is the son of the ex-Wimbledon and Aston Villa player Kevin Gage, Sheffield United player as well, so Ollie Gage. So fairly surreal.
Excellent. While we're talking Canada, by the way, shout out to Jesse Fleming, who was so excellent for the Canada women's team, Chelsea player who helped them win the gold medal. Sam, you at a game this weekend?
Yeah, I'm at the Bridge on Saturday, and I heard a tremendous rumour that there may be some food in the press room, so I'm going to be taking my ladle and positioning myself accordingly. But no, really looking forward to it. Should be a good game. And I was in at the Bridge the other day, so there was various rumours circulating about what we're going to be served up, so looking forward to it.
Well, I can add some meat to the bone, if you'll forgive me a rather delicious pun. For the Spurs game, there were like pre-packed boxes of either sandwiches, salads or pies. You can't eat it in the press room, but you can take something away.
Our listeners are not interested in this. In fact,
everybody loves the Chelsea buffet.
It's turning them against us.
I agree with Dom, but that was the gist. That was the gist of about a 2-hour conversation. when I was supposed to be preparing for a very serious pre-Super League show.
Hey, this is the kind of insight that people come to The Athletic for. Many thanks to Dom, Sam, solid debut. Producer Lucy for knocking it all together too. We'll be back on Monday looking back at what happens at Stamford Bridge this weekend. Do join us then if you can. From all of us here though, for now, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.